Good intro. Hey guys, how's everyone doing? I never know if I should ask that or not, but it feels like I have to say something before I start talking. I hate when I'm in the crowd and they ask you how you're doing. You're like, do I answer? Do I not? So thanks, Bernie, for the intro. Just to give you a quick bit of background about me before I start. So Dan Moriarty, Director of Social Strategy and Activation at Hyatt Hotels. Someone once told me that you can tell everything you need to know about someone by their last 9 Instagram pictures. So I figured rather than talking about myself, I'd just put them up. I'm not too sure what it actually says about me, but there's some music, a cow, a robot, me playing football, and my kids. That's a pretty accurate summary, I'd say. As Bernie said, I work for Hyatt Hotels. Hopefully most of you guys know who they are, but for those who don't, we're a hospitality brand, represents about 630 hotels globally across about 12 different brands. Everything from Park Hyatt, which is one of our luxury hotels, down to Hyatt Place or Hyatt House, which is our top of the range but select service offering. What a lot of people don't know about Hyatt is that we don't actually think of ourselves as a hospitality company. We actually think about ourselves as a care company. And we have this higher purpose of caring for people to be their best. I know it sounds like marketing speak. I'm sure a lot of you guys are familiar with purposes and kind of what they mean to marketers. But the way we think about this is in an increasingly competitive hospitality space, if you think about not just hotels that we're competing with and some recent mergers that you guys might have heard of. You've also got the sharing economy. You've got online travel agencies such as Expedia, TripAdvisor playing a bigger role. And so our question to ourselves is, how do we just play a bigger part in your guys' lives? How do we, you know, when you guys are traveling, how do we make you want to stay at a Hyatt rather than going to an OTA or through the sharing economy or through a competitor? And we think the thing that makes us different, because we're the smallest of the big hotel companies, is that we can better care for all of you guys when you're in our hotels. Whenever you're traveling, whether it's for fun or for work, there's normally a core reason that you're traveling. Even if it's just relaxing and chilling out and doing nothing, there's still a reason that you're in our hotels and in our properties. And we think that by better knowing you, by knowing you more personally, by being more empathetic, we can better care for you. Whether care means bringing you a drink to the pool when you're sitting there reading a book, or if it means making sure you're on a high enough room away from an elevator so you get a good night's sleep before you have a big presentation the next morning. By knowing the reason why you're traveling, we can do a better job of making an experience for you and make you guys more loyal to the Hyatt brand. So this is our higher purpose. Everything that we're going to speak about in the next 35, 40 minutes or so is around social customer care. And so the way that we position this internally is that social customer care is really just an extension of our purpose. Like, we can get to better know you guys through Twitter, through Instagram, through Facebook, through Messenger, through WeChat, by having conversations with you, by tying it back to our own CRM data. That lets us actually better know who you are and better service you, whether it's on the stay that you're in, so it's a specific request, or if it's more like a preference or a certain thing that you like when you travel that we can identify through these platforms and record down on your guys' profiles for the hotels to activate locally. And I think the fact that we've been able to make a lot of strides in this space at Hyatt is because we have this higher purpose that gears us. So it's really easy for us to ladder this into a business strategy that's core to how we're trying to differentiate our business. As Bernie said at the start, so we've actually been doing this since about 2009. It's before my time with Hyatt. We actually were the first major hotel brand to launch a hotel concierge on Twitter. It actually was very different back then. The focus was all around, if you're in our hotels and you want to know where the best sushi restaurant is, tweet us. We'll look at Yelp, find the best Yelp score, and tweet that back. Yes. Great idea, but it was, you know, it's kind of very early on, and it's naturally evolved from there. I think people realized, okay, it's cool that you can tell us what's listed high on Yelp, but it's even cooler that I can get a early check-in. It's cool that I can get a higher floor. It's cool that I can get a sea view. It's cool that I can actually do stuff that has genuine functional utility. And so year over year, we've just seen this rocketing in growth of people coming and using the service. As Bernie mentioned, before we kind of get into some of the specifics, I do co-host a podcast called Focus on Customer Service, FOCS. We're still not too sure about the title. We kind of panicked and made it up. It's really about social customer service, and I would say it's more kind of about conversational marketing is the words we're using now, about how do we have one-on-one dialogues with our guests, with our customers, that actually drive them to be more loyal to the brand, to buy more product. All the podcast is myself and Dan, we get big brands on and we interview them. So we talk to them about kind of what they've been doing in the space, what's working, what's not. We've had everyone from Whole Foods, UFC, Twitter, T-Mobile, Hertz, a whole bunch of great and big brands that have kind of come on and talked to us. They're normally about 25 to 30 minutes long. So if anyone's interested, it's worth a listen. And the one question that we always ask at the end. And actually, quick show of hands before we get into this. How many of you, for your brands or your clients, have to think about social customer service? How many of you don't, out of interest? How many of you didn't 3 years ago? Oh, most of you have done it for years. Okay, cool. Because my problem with social customer service is people like myself, I have no customer service background. I was actually a digital marketer before this. And most people that I talk to have kind of stumbled into this career path. There's not like a college for doing social customer service stuff. There's not a kid who's growing up saying, when I'm older, I want to lead social customer service for a hospitality brand. And so one of the things we always ask is when you came into it, what did you wish you knew? What now that you've done 3 or 4 years of doing this, do you wish you knew 3 or 4 years ago that would have avoided you making some mistakes or, you know, potentially running down the wrong path and wasting some time? And so I thought, rather than, for this session, rather than just kind of talking vaguely for 35 minutes, I'd actually answer this question myself, but times 10. So what's the 10 things that I think I've learned over the last like 3.5 years of doing this that I wish I'd known 3.5 years ago? Some of them might come across a little bit obvious, and hopefully some of them will be somewhat interesting to you guys. So the number one learning that I think is really easy to say, very hard to do, is that people have to come first. The way we think about this is twofold. There's two big groups of people that really drive our social customer service efforts, and it's our guests and it's our colleagues. When you think about guests, I think with the volume that we're dealing with, you know, we're getting hundreds of thousands of conversations a year with guests. It's very easy to forget that they're a person. You see a little Twitter handle, you see a little bio, you see a little picture. It's very easy to turn them into this like digital entity rather than an actual person who's sitting behind a phone. And so we always stress to our colleagues that are responding to them the importance of remembering that's Dan, that's Whitney, that's Steph, that's Russin. That's a person who's traveling for a need that we need to better care for. So we've done things like working with Stanford D School on empathy training so that our agents are actually able to really empathize with why you're traveling and try and get to the core of who you are as a person. The second side of people over everything else is our agents. The single biggest thing that I've learned is we started with like a 400, it wasn't quite 400 pages, but I'm exaggerating because I'm on stage. It's about a 400 page guidebook of how to do social customer service. And so every tweet they would get, they'd have to go and look at this guidebook and try and find out, okay, what's the appropriate protocol for that? And I don't know how much time was spent on creating this book. What we've realized, it doesn't matter. You just have to free your people up to really run with it. You have to trust them. And that's really where the magic can come from, is when you just let your people be your people. One of my favorite examples about this is, obviously, Hyatt, we have a lot of meetings and events and conventions like this inside our hotels. And we had one, it was about a year ago, and I don't even know what it was, to be honest. It was like a Star Wars convention. It was something sci-fi-y, a little bit geeky. No offense to any Star Wars fans out there. But one of our agents knew exactly what the convention was and was super pumped that it was in a Hyatt and actually volunteered for the shifts while that conference was on and spent the whole 2 days tweeting geeky references from the Hyatt handle in response to the people that were putting up pictures of them in like these Princess Leia costumes. I mean, it was above my head, but like the people there were absolutely loving it. And again, that's how you better care for them. They're there because they want to celebrate their love of all things sci-fi. And we were able to actually find the right person to join that conversation. So no matter what else you do, you just have to find the right people and then figure out how to get everything else out of their way to let them run with it. Second thing is invest in technology. We have been on a journey, I would say, from a technology perspective. I'm sure a lot of you guys who do it have kind of been on a similar sort of journey. We started out, I think the original technology that was being used back in 2009 was a Hootsuite type tool. So, you know, it's free. You've got a million columns. You've got 6 agents working across a million columns with no accountability. They're all using one login. You can't see who's sending what. Started there. We then moved from that to all-in-one technology. Again, I'm sure a lot of you guys are familiar with, so a Spreadfast, a Sprinklr, a Percolate, those sorts of tools that try and do absolutely everything in the social space. That was great for a little while, but as the volume continued to grow, which it will if you do this stuff well, you'll see your volumes just growing year over year over year. It gets really hard inside some of those all-in-one technologies to have like multiple agents working out of them. In these all-in-one technologies, oftentimes they recommend that you have someone who acts literally as a traffic director. So they sit there, they look at every single piece of content that comes in, and their job is deciding, does this need responding to? If so, who's currently on duty that's the best person to respond to it and assigning it to them? And these people would literally sit there for hours just kind of just combing through all of that stuff, making sure that we weren't responding twice to the same piece of content. They just, it was a completely inefficient use for someone like us with the sort of volume that we had. We've now moved into a dedicated solution. So we actually work with ConverSocial, but there's also Spark Central and a few others out there, which are actually built specifically for social customer service. So effectively, our agents log on, they hit a play button, it starts streaming them no more than 5 pieces of content, so they're not getting to pick and choose from a queue of 500 pieces of content what they want to respond to. It gives us things like agent response times, agent response rates, how many pieces of content they're dealing with in an average hour. So you're actually able to get a lot better at training the agents of seeing who's doing a good job, who's doing a bad job. We also now, with these dedicated technologies, with the all-in-ones, we would know our response time today, tomorrow, which is a bit too late for the guests that are in our hotels today that need help to see that we've actually got a slow response time. With these dedicated technologies, you can find out in 10 or 15 minutes when your response time has spiked beyond an average that you find acceptable. So from a technology perspective, it's the only way to scale care. You know, if we really want to care for you guys, if we really want to get to know you as best we can, we have to have a solid technology in the background, which also, by the way, another big advantage over some of the legacy technologies, it tracks all of the conversation history. So the second time you speak to us, you're not starting again from scratch. We know who you are. We're able to run with it. Third one, and this was by far my biggest learning, is real care happens offline. I think this is especially true for hospitality, but I've been trying to rack my brains for a brand where this isn't true, and I can't think of one. And that's the idea that it doesn't happen in a Hyatt's, but let's say you had a bad experience. pause for laughter. Us apologizing on Twitter doesn't make it better. Like, what makes it better is the experience actually changing. And so we have to invest a huge amount of time and effort into actually bringing the organization along. We have maybe 50 to 60 agents globally that are trained to respond. What we realized is that wasn't enough. We actually had to talk to all of the general managers of the hotels. We have to talk to all of the directors of operations of the hotels and explain to them why a guest tweeting that the shower isn't working is just as important as a guest calling the front desk and saying the shower's not working. If not, more so, but I won't get into that one now. We've literally had situations, this is back in our early days, our contact center would call hotels in certain markets and say, hey, we've got a guest in your room, they're not happy, can you go and talk to them? The hotel would hang up on us because they thought we were pranking them. They didn't understand that guests would actually be tweeting about this rather than coming down and talking to them face to face. So we had to go through this big kind of educational session around what social guests are and why they're being social. And the fact that they're not tweeting because they're not social, because they don't want to come down and talk to you. They're tweeting because they're busy working. They're doing stuff and they're in their rooms and they don't want to come down and wait for someone to be ready to talk to them or call a line and be passed around between departments to find the right person. Most of you guys, if you use social care for yourself as a guest or as a customer, you do it because it's convenient. You do it because it fits in with the way you live your lives. And so we really had to go through a lot of education with our hotels to really get them to the point where they jump just as high for a guest who tweets or Instagrams or WhatsApps or messages them as for a guest who comes down to their front desk or for a guest that calls them or for a guest that emails them. There's also, you know, beyond education, there's obviously also an important connection from a technology perspective here for us. We need to make sure if a guest is on premise right now, it's fairly easy, right? You call the hotel, you tell them, hey, we've got a guest in room 1211, wants to have a conversation with you. Someone goes up, talks to them, fairly easy. Where it gets harder is we'll have guests who will request a rollaway cot 3 weeks in advance of them coming. So our team actually has to like get online, log into the hotel's operational systems and put the note there. And so you have to make sure that all of our background operational systems are actually talking to each other as well. Because, again, from your guys' perspective, if you've requested a rollaway cot, you don't care if you requested it at the point you booked, over the phone, when you got there, or on Twitter. You just expect the cot to be in your room, and if it's not, you're pissed. So you just really have to figure out how do you connect all of these systems together to make sure that we don't have this amazing online response time and we're responding in 3 minutes, but we're actually not making anything better. Like, our whole goal, our team's whole goal is better caring for the guests. And that only happens offline. Like, occasionally you can do little things online that are like gimmicky, like liking tweets or responding to Princess Layla tweets. But really, the magic happens when you actually make something happen in the room for that guest. Number four, and you guys, you know, who all held up your hands have probably seen this as well. 3.5 years ago, when I started this, I kind of sat down, read some research. You know, how quickly do we need to respond? What are the expectations of not even our guests, what's the expectations of the industry? And at the time, everyone was saying 24 hours was your goal. You know, respond in 24 hours and everyone's okay. A few years ago, it kind of went down to 12 hours. Somehow last year, it became 30 minutes. There's now data. I don't know if any of you guys have seen the Twitter study they released recently about social customer service, but they've now got data that shows there's an increased willingness for customers to spend money on brands they've had social care responses from previously. And it was airline focused, and I think they found an average of 14, I might be wrong on this number, but it's close, around $14 for an airline that they've had a social customer service interaction with versus one they haven't. They're willing to pay $14 more for the exact same route at the exact same time in the exact same seat. But what they also found is that that $14 is solely dependent upon response time. If you respond after an hour, that $14 is actually $2, so a very small incremental willingness to spend. If you respond under 6 minutes, which they found was the peak, was a 6 minute threshold, that willingness goes up to about $20 or $21 that they're willing to spend per flight based on the experience that they've had with you. So suddenly now, speed doesn't just matter from an expectation perspective. There's now data out there that shows that speed actually matters from a willingness to spend more money with your brands moving forwards. Obviously, speed's easy to say, hard to do. It's hard to predict. It's variance. You can have a very good or a very bad day that can really drive volumes up or down, depending on what's happening. What's really important is, you know, work to plan for speed. So set what your response time expectations are. So for us, we still work against 30 minutes. You know, we want to try and get it down, and actually our average response time is about 12 minutes. But 30 minutes is when alarm bells start going off in our contact centers and corporate office if we see response time spike over that. But then you also have to look at things like, okay, if a guest tweets at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Chicago time, pretty easy for us to get a 12-minute response time. We have a big team in Nebraska that's really managing that full time. We have them around the world. We have them in Australia and we have them in Germany, and they do 24/7, but the teams in those markets are much smaller. So if a guest tweets at 1 o'clock in the morning, we're not always responding in 12 minutes. Sometimes it can be a little bit longer. And so you really have to work through internally these arguments of, are we okay with that? If a guest is in Australia and tweets and a guest is in Chicago and tweets, are we okay that we're actually responding to the Chicago guest quicker? And normally the answer would be no. And so that's kind of how we've been able to move the organization through staffing up to respond to speed. This is kind of an evolution of people first, or people over everything, which is trust over process. And I kind of mentioned the book that we started with. You really have to tell the team that you're trusting them, and that whatever they do, as long as they can argue with you, or not argue with you, as long as they can prove to you that what they were attempting to do was to better care for the guest, we really have removed all process from the experience, and we back our staff up again, as long as they can show us why they were putting the guest first. And this is actually something, it's one of my favorite Hyatt stories. This was something that we were pushing for, and we were getting a lot of pushback, right? Like organizations, I'm sure a lot of your guys' organizations, whether or not we like to admit it, a lot of senior management has got where they are through repetition, through process, through kind of command and control, rather than really unleashing people to go away and do what they do best. Our CEO, maybe 3 or 4 years ago now, went on a bit of a global tour around different hotels to spend time with guests, you know, watch the check-in experience, watch how maids make up rooms, you know, one of those like immerse yourself in the business type trips. And on his first hotel, he flew to Hong Kong, did the overnight from Chicago. For anyone that's done it, it's a pretty brutal flight, about 14, 15 hours. Mark, our CEO, standing behind the front desk, watching a young lady who, unfortunately, it was her first day working for Hyatt. She's got a CEO of the whole company standing behind her as she checks someone in. And her first guest is actually an American who's just off a flight as well. So he's just flown from the US, just got into Hong Kong. I mean, even if it's just a two-hour flight, this is the same, but especially overnight international, when you check in, you want one thing and one thing only, your room. And then probably a shower, but that's connected to the room. This poor lady who was checking him in had gone through 3 or 4 weeks of Hyatt training around how to check in a guest. And there was about a 42-step process that you have to ask people questions. You have to ask for a form of identification. You have to ask for a major credit card. You have to ask, have they been here before? You have to ask if they've been to Hong Kong before. You have to ask if they're a loyalty member. You have to ask if they want the credit card. There's all of these things that over time we've incrementally added into the process that actually make it hugely laborious if you follow it to the T. A lot of our agents don't, because they actually have the confidence to know not to follow that and to react to the guest. But this poor girl, again, day one, CEO standing behind her, followed her training to the T. So I asked the 42 questions. This poor guest was just standing there like, I just want the room. I just want a shower. Come on, let me go. Afterwards, Mark grabbed the lady and said, sorry, I've got to ask you. Like, it was so clear he just wanted to go. He didn't want to talk to you. Why did you keep asking the questions? And she said, well, that's what we're trained to do. And you're standing right behind me. And I thought that you'd grade me down if I didn't ask these 42 questions. And literally that day, Mark sent an all-company email, so 95,000 employees, whatever it is, saying that we were ripping up rule books, unleashing employees. You know, it really gets down to, I think they've now figured out that for check-in, we only need three things, which is credit card, form of identification, and there's one other thing that I'm forgetting. Maybe it's just two. That's all they have to ask now. Everything else is completely up to the agent. If they think that you're interested in the loyalty program, they'll speak about the loyalty program. If they think you might be interested in things to do in New Orleans, they might ask, have you been to New Orleans before, and engage in conversation. But they've all been trained to actually read guests and figure out when don't they want to talk, because we've all had it, right? We've all had those moments where you check in and you want to have a big conversation. You've had those other ones where you don't want to say anything. You want to give them a credit card and an ID, and you don't want to have to say a word to them. So when our CEO went through this, it was really easy for us then to rip up our rule book. We now have, we call them six guiding principles. So it's things like embrace smart risk. So it's telling them we really want to embrace risk, but let's be smart about it. Let's not do stupid things. As long as you can argue why you've done something and why you've taken this leap of faith, go for it. All of our agents, I probably shouldn't say this actually, but all of our agents are able to spend up to a certain amount of money on surprise and delights without getting any approval from management whatsoever. So we've just minimized all of these things to really trust the agents to go ahead and do the right thing. And then ultimately it all comes back to, are they proving that they're better caring for the guests to be their best? And if they are, then we're good with kind of whatever they do. And that does occasionally backfire. You know, we have had situations where things haven't gone exactly as planned. But again, as long as our agents can point to which of the behaviors they thought they were exhibiting, we're completely good. And that is all the direction that they get. They get these six guiding principles and they get our overarching higher purpose. They get some technology training on how to use the tools. But other than that, there's not really much that we put them through before we let them start speaking to guests. Which leads me to our second. So if the last one was trust over process, I love the idea of momentum over perfection. I really genuinely think the only way to learn social customer service, whether you're an agent or a manager who's managing the team, is to actually start doing it. It's so hard to like think about what might happen in the space and to like, you can plan infinitely for all of the unlimited options that might happen at some point in time. But the only way you really learn, it's like anything. You can't learn how to build a table by reading it about it online. You have to get a saw and wood out and you have to actually like build it. I've never built a table. I don't know why I use that analogy. And so we really, really believe in momentum over perfection. So again, this is the same way that if an agent occasionally makes a mistake, which you know, again, with hundreds of thousands of conversations per year in a text-based environment, in a field that's largely public-facing, they are occasionally going to get things wrong. I once came into work to find that we were on the front page of BuzzFeed, which normally you would be like, woohoo, you know, viral. Unfortunately, it turned out that one of our hotels in Australia had done a special dish called, it was grilled octopus and grilled aubergine, which is eggplant outside of America. Unfortunately, they've misspelled aubergine as Aborigine, which is the local native population in Australia. Someone tweeted it out and said, interesting dish. And our team who was responding, who were in Nebraska in America, didn't know what an Aborigine or an aubergine was, because they call it eggplant, responded, enjoy your lunch. BuzzFeed had a field day talking about that one. But again, like, there's no, like, someone actually asked me, like, what happened to the individual? Nothing. Like, we talked about, you know, we had a session about what Aborigines and aubergines are. But beyond that, I mean, it's one mistake that's going to happen and really didn't negatively impact us in the long run. And so it's really about this idea of investing in momentum. And like, part of this for us is hugely carrot rather than stick. Like, we don't punish agents when they make mistakes. Again, unless they do something that's deliberately bad, that's different. If they make an accidental mistake, we don't punish them. We'll talk to them. We'll kind of explain what we would have expected to have happen, but we won't. There's no punishment. The carrot, we actually have a monthly award. We went on eBay and bought the most hideous, huge statue we can find. It's about 3 feet tall. We put a plaque on it that says Tweet of the Month. The agent who sends the best tweet or messenger message or Instagram response, any of the platforms, gets this trophy on their desk and literally sits on their desk as a badge of honor for a month. and they get an Amazon gift card to go out and like buy something fun. So we're actually incentivizing the behaviors that we want rather than punishing the ones that we don't. And we found that's how you get them beyond just have a nice day. Like that's how you actually get them to be human and try and engage with people. I think this is number 7, messaging for the win. I learned this acronym, so I'm quite proud of this one. First time I saw it, I was like, "Futadabu." I'm sure you guys have all seen the growth in messaging platforms. I mean, for anyone who was following F8 recently, or even last year's Facebook announcement, the opening of Messenger for Business, now all the transactional bots that are happening, WhatsApp looking to open up their APIs for brands to be a part of. Increasingly, actually, this is probably one of the few areas where the Western social networks have really taken a lead from the Asian social networks, where messaging's been huge for a long time, and it is, I mean, if anyone's ever played with WeChat and seen what you can do inside it, it's basically all of your favorite apps combined into a messaging app. You order plane tickets, you order movie tickets, you order an Uber, all inside the messaging app, and that's really where Facebook are really trying to kind of look to take Messenger and WhatsApp. The reason I'm so excited about this, like, I love Twitter. Twitter's 305 million monthly active uniques. Messenger's 900 million, so it's 3 times bigger. For our core demographic, for our core user base, Messenger's going to be a much more popular app than Twitter, just given the age demographics of kind of who's on those platforms. So super excited about messaging. I think to start with, we kind of didn't view the upside of messaging. So we're like, no, we like Twitter, we like it being public, we like to get the marketing value out of it. What we've realized since we launched Messenger in November last year, obviously, not this year, people are much more personal on Messenger. They're willing to tell us much deeper things because it's private. So we're getting a lot more things like, I'm traveling with my wife and it's her anniversary, I want to surprise her, and things that wouldn't have gone on public platforms before. And they might have gone through Twitter DM, but someone had to know how to use Twitter, which, you know, if you use it, it's great. If you don't, it's quite intimidating. So we're seeing huge growth in messaging volume. We're up about 20 times where we were in November already. So that's in what, like 6 months. And this is only going to continue to grow. And I'd say any business right now that doesn't have a solid messaging strategy is quickly going to get left behind. And also, by the way, everything else I've just shared is doubly important on messaging. Like speed of response time for Twitter, messaging, like Messenger again, you have to be so much quicker. Like we have things like, if you message Hyatt, you get the read notification that you get with a friend. So when you send a message to a friend and you see they've read it and not respond, you're pissed. When you send it to a brand and you see they've read it and not responded, and you've spent $300 on a room night, you're furious. We have typing notifications. So if our agents, we've had to train them, like, don't start typing and then stop. Because if you're just seeing those three dots, you're like, what the hell are they doing? So there's all of these things you have to think through again once you move into messaging that are just going to be super important. The next one, and this one's really, really key for me, is you have to remember all of them. And for me, this is a slightly fancier way of saying integrate social with your CRMs. The way I describe this is, and this might not be a good analogy, but bear with me for a second. Talking to brands is kind of like talking to celebrities. Not in the sense that you get all like, you know, fanboy and like, you know, fanning yourself off because you start sweating with excitement, but it's the idea that you remember it because you only talk to a few brands a year probably. The brand talks to hundreds of thousands of people, and so they forget it. In much the same way a celebrity will very rarely remember meeting a fan because they're meeting so many through the course of the year. It feels really unhuman if you've had a conversation with someone and they know you've given them, say, your gold passport number, which is your loyalty number. You've told them where you live. You've told them that you have a kid and you're traveling with them. And then 2 days later, 2 days later, you talk to them again and they ask you, what's your loyalty number? Are you traveling on your own? And you're kind of like, well, you've had all these conversations already. And so the only way to really humanize or like personalize the brand is to remember everything that that guest has said about you. And technology plays a role here, but the agents play a role as well. You have to make sure you're training them to jot notes down that you can actually use to better service that guest specifically. Not to use an insight that guest gave to make the experience better for everyone, but how do you take something about that guest and actually make it better for every single person? Sorry, for every single visit that that guest has in the future. So we're doing things like, we now have, or we will have very shortly, things like customer lifetime value will be pumped in to our social care response. So when you respond, if we know who you are, if you've given us your loyalty number before, we'll be able to see in the system what your lifetime value is to us as a brand. We'll be able to see what your last stay is, what your next stay is. We'll be able to see your average NPS. So typically, are you a happy or an unhappy member? We'll be able to use all of that stuff to then actually see We'll also have what we call your preference notes. So we'll record things like, have any of you guys ever asked a hotel room like not to put full fat soda in your rooms because you're on a diet? We record that stuff. And then next time you come, we put water, we put seltzers, and we put stuff like that in your rooms. We're also now getting some of that stuff from social. So if you say, like we had a great example a few days ago, we had a guest who is a high customer lifetime value to us that we know nothing about. For whatever reason, we've just got no notes about her. We were able, with our operations guys, to find her on Twitter and find that she's a mum of three and a huge baseball fan. That's now recorded in her profile. When she travels, they know she's a mum of three. So they know if she's on her own, she's gonna wanna rest, and she might wanna go to a baseball game. If they see she's traveling, they can email her and say, hey, are you traveling on your own or are you bringing your children? And so just that sort of information that you can get that we can record. There's a creepy factor. I know some of you are thinking it. I was like, wait, everyone's looking. I was like, oh yeah, the creepy stuff. I've got to talk about that. I mean, the thing I think about creepiness, right? As long as you don't say, how's little Johnny? I think it's all right, you know? We never say like, are you traveling with your three daughters? I'm so happy that she graduated from high school. We just know going into it that they have children and that they're not traveling with them or that they are traveling with them. And then there's little things that you can do, like putting DVDs in the room if you know they are traveling with the kids, or if you know they're not traveling with the kids. If they're a high customer lifetime value member, maybe you put a $50 spa certificate because you know they've got three kids at home. They're going to want a massage. They're going to want to relax or something. So it's more about how you use the information versus straight up saying like, hey, how's Johnny? So remember them. Number nine, test new platforms. This is super easy. If you've got the technology, the training, the people, if all of that stuff's right, it's so easy to roll out new platforms. Like I talked to some people in some brands who ask us how we got Messenger live so quickly because it took them 6 months internally to make the business case for it. For us, it literally was like, hey, Messenger's open for business. Should we use it? Yeah. Okay, cool. And then go and integrate it because the technologies are there, the training's there, the people's there. And so we're big fans of whenever a platform opens up in a way that we can then bring it into the system, pull it into the system, and let's see if we can actually better care for guests. One of my favorite examples here was Instagram. We didn't know with Instagram if we'd be able to better care for you. We knew that we'd be able to like your pictures and that would be kind of a cool experience, but like, can we genuinely improve your experience? We thought, screw it, let's put it in and see what happens. We pulled it in, and on day one, one of my favorite stories, guy was staying Hyatt Regency McCormick Place, so it's a bit south of here, just in the south loop of Chicago. Was there for the auto show, which is a big, you guys all Chicago-based, the big car show they have here. Put up a picture on Instagram of an ultrasound of his unborn child from his wife in like Cleveland, who'd gone for her first ultrasound of their first child. He put it up, tagged it to the hotel, and just said, I'm having such a great time at the hotel, but really sad not to be home today. Team saw that, they called the hotel. Within like 20 minutes, this guy had a man care basket that was four different types of bacon. I didn't even know there was types of bacon, but four different types of bacon, four different craft beers, a pay-per-view movie voucher, just a handwritten note from a handful of the staff saying like, congratulations, enjoy the beer and bacon on us and watch a movie. It's probably the last chance you'll get for a while. Just something human like that. This guy, by the way, you know, to address the creepy factor, Instagrammed that, tweeted about it, and wrote a TripAdvisor review. And by the way, this is before we had any of the CRM stuff, so we have no idea who this guy is. We don't know if he's a loyalty member, nothing. It was just the ability to see that stuff and see such a human moment and then have the team jump on it is what can happen when you throw new platforms in and see if they work. Then lastly, this is my favorite, overthink the strategy, not the tactics. We spent a bunch of time at the start, you know, throwing away the rule books, figuring out what our nine guiding principles are, like figuring out how the purpose played a role. We overthought that a ton so that as we have these small opportunities, as we have conferences that we can play a part of, as we have ultrasounds, as we have all of that, or as we have new platforms, the tactic stuff isn't a decision. Like very rarely is a tactical decision for us more than a 5-minute conversation because our strategy is so clear. We know what we're trying to achieve. We know how we're measuring it. We know who's involved. We know who needs to be a part of the decisions so that the tactics we can actually run really fast with. And for me, that's where we get an advantage, is we're able to move so quickly on a lot of this stuff because the strategy actually covers pretty much anything that can happen in the space. So that's the 10. How am I doing for time? Cool. So I wrote the 10 out like this so that it's in one format. I then figured that some of you might want to tweet it. So I made it tweetable, 60 characters. I then figured that's still quite a lot and hard to remember, so I made it super easy for you guys to remember. Hashtag P-toast mortis. And with that, I'd like to open up to any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Dan. All right. You guys know the drill. I'm on this side of the room, so if there's a question over here, we'll start here. And if not, I'm willing to, I didn't get to the gym this morning, so I'm willing to jog down that way. So you guys want me, oh, we got an icebreaker over here. Fantastic.
Don't ask me what the hashtag stands for.
I was wondering, you know, just knowing that you're always out there trying to make things better, well, how do you guys deal with customers that are just habitually unhappy? I know you mentioned that you have records on, you know, who is generally happy and who's generally not.
Yeah.
Do you have, you know, like special programs or plans in place for those people who tend to not be?
Yes, but not necessarily through social. So we have, if you're like top tier Diamond member, which is our like top tier of our loyalty program, you have what's called a dedicated customer service rep that you can go to with certain questions. For social, all we do is, we have flags, right? If we know you're a routine complainer, we have a flag that goes on you, and it doesn't mean we won't not respond to you, but we won't do things like immediately, you know, have the agent use all of the money that they're allowed to spend to make you happy, because we know the people that are kind of routinely doing it. I actually get this question a lot internally, and I think, and I don't know if we're lucky, because we're a pretty decent brand and most of our hotels are pretty good, we don't get that many. Like what we tend to get instead is, we have the people that have a bad experience that have complained at the hotel and the hotel's made right, so including like comping their entire stay sometimes, who then get home and then start complaining on Facebook and Twitter. And what happens then is we'll call the hotel and we'll talk to the hotel and we'll say like, hey, what happened with this guest? And they'll, thankfully, we all use the same record management system, so they're able to look it up and say, okay, yeah, they were on a room that ended up having road construction outside, they got woken up early, they weren't happy, we comped the night. And in those situations, we kind of have to say to the guest, you know, I see the room was comped, apologies again, and you just kind of have to put a line under it. There's actually, and I'm sure a lot of you guys know Jay Baer, podcaster and general social guy. He has a saying that you never respond more than twice to a guest if your response is the same. So in the same conversation, you can respond at later dates. But like if we respond, if say in that example, we respond, you know, I can see your stay was comped. Or actually, we wouldn't do that publicly. We would say, I could see you've talked to the hotel about it. Privately, we might say, I can see it's comped. We look forward to welcoming you back. If they complain again, if we're going to say exactly the same thing in response, which is all we can say, unless they bring new evidence, at that point, we just walk away. Because I really think, like, we as a brand, and we collectively as consumers, we know when we've been wronged, and we know when we've been righted, and we know when we're pushing for too much. And I'd say, if we're confident with what we've done to kind of make it right, and they're still complaining, we're never going to win that argument, and you're just kind of spinning your wheels. But the other thing I also say internally is the thing that I really love about what we do, and the reason we call it social customer care rather than social customer service, is it's not about making bad experiences okay, it's about making great experiences even better. Like it's those small nuances you can do that we don't just respond to complaints. I'd say complaints are probably less than 5% of our volume. The vast majority is just us talking to people that are in our hotels, because travel is such a social experience. Like people are always, you know, you're Instagramming and geotagging it, you're on Twitter, you're writing reviews. There's so much stuff there that we can use that is bigger and better than just making a stay that was bad okay.
Okay, so I'm from an independent hotel myself down in Champaign, Illinois.
Wait, do you know Anna?
What?
Do you know Anna?
Anna
Shalorsky?
Yes.
Yeah, she actually told me you were coming.
Yeah, I just got in touch with
Sorry,
her
that was
today.
Super personal for a whole room.
Yeah, she actually told me to introduce myself, so yeah, hello, that's
Hi,
me.
Hi, how you doing?
But yes, I work at an independent hotel down in Champaign, and we just really started focusing on social back in January when I got hired on. I specifically got hired to focus on that. So we do a lot of customer service aspects and brand awareness with our social media, but the big question for my CEO is how to specifically connect our social media pages to room nights.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know if Hyatt has any processes or any way to track that through yours.
Yeah, so obviously there's more traditional social, which is just about making sure you're using your on-site tracking and putting links to anything from social you're driving. The way specifically we think about social care, and this is no secret sauce here, right? Like every experiential business looks at Net Promoter Score, NPS. So whenever you guys leave hotels, we send you the surveys. How was the experience? How likely would you be to recommend this to a friend? We know categorically that NPS is tied into future hotel performance. Hotels with higher NPSs have higher long-term revenue performance. We also know that social care drives NPS, that if you're a guest and you tweet that your shower's not working, and 5 minutes later, this is a real story, by the way, 5 minutes later, the general manager knocks on your room with a key to the room next door, which has a shower that is working, that takes you from maybe a 3 on the NPS scale to a 7 or an 8 or a 9. We know that we can move people up the NPS scale by better caring for them, and we know this is a way to better care for them. So really, from a care perspective, that's how we tie it into room nights. And we're going to be getting better at that as we, some of the CRM integration stuff I've showed you, I'd love if it was fully functional. We're still working through some of the kind of computer stuff of it. Once that's up and really kicking and we have tens of thousands of members synced at the loyalty card member level, we'll actually be able to start seeing, okay, if we have a social customer service interaction, what does that do to future purchase behaviors? But we even know from ourselves that we see people use, say, Messenger one time, we'll see their own individual use spike, and they'll actually like send us a note thanking us for the service and saying that they've started staying more. We've had members that have changed loyalty programs and joined Gold Passport because of what we're able to do for them digitally. So it's a combination of the analytical stuff where you can get it, and then the kind of conversational stuff, like showing those cases internally when you can get it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, we've got just 2 minutes, so we're going to take a quick question and a quick response, Dan.
Uh-oh.
My question is just about the relationship between the social team and operations. Mm-hmm. So I know you mentioned you had a lot of educational conversations so that they understand why a social customer is just as important as one calling the desk.
Yeah.
What else do you do or have you done to continue to foster and educate those teams? Because I think that's something we sort of struggle with, is it's a priority for a few days and then it's back to what happens operationally and what they're dealing with every day. Yeah. So it's a constant, I mean, it's always going to be continual, but is there anything you've seen a lot of success with?
Yeah. So we actually, I mean, when I say we had educational conversations, we literally brought every general manager of a hotel into a session where it was a full day social education. It was everything from, we'd spend the first hour and a half talking about how the world's changed, just like literally trends, and not like the high level, super forward looking trends. It was just like what's happening today, how has the world shifted? Educating them through that, then talking them through the general managers and leadership, all they really care about is, okay, cool, the world's changed. How is it impacting us, and how can that change drive our bottom line? So we then talk through the core kind of business goals, if you will, that we think social can drive and illustrate connections between it. We then literally like have sessions where they come to us with phones and they're like, set me up on Twitter. And we set them up on Twitter. We show them like, this is how to search for a hashtag about your hotel. This is how to find a geolocation of your hotel. And then, as you say, you have, I'd say probably half that go back and never use it again. You have 25% that stay somewhat interested, but we have 25% that have really run with it. We've got general managers that will go and meet guests in their lobby because they've seen them tweeting and they want to put a name to the face. We have a Facebook community of over 850 now, people around the world in our hotels who are interested in social. They're not social people. They're like general managers and director of operations and rooms and HR that just come and kind of talk about this stuff and help us push out stuff as we change it. And then lastly, we actually have now two whole people that are dedicated just to that job, effectively. So like educating the field, making sure they have the technologies, the processes, the trainings, the community, the network that they need to be successful locally. It's definitely not easy. As you say, you can't do an hour long webinar and then walk away and think your job's done. It's continuous, and it's same as the agents, it's carrot, not the stick. You know, it's finding the ones that are doing a great job and holding them up as an example. And actually, one of the things we've had, which has been really lucky, sorry, about 2 seconds, we've had general managers who have embraced social, whose careers have actually really taken off internally, because they have a visibility. Like, we have our CEOs on Twitter, our CMOs on Twitter, our chief legal counsels, like all of the C teams on Twitter. So if you have a general manager that's doing good work, they're recognized. Because whereas the, you know, 630 general managers, there's only so much time a CEO can spend understanding about each of them. But if they're on Twitter and they're sharing like the amazing new colleague break room that they've created for their colleagues, our CEO's seeing that stuff on Twitter. And so we recently had a guy move from a airport hotel in France to a Grand Hyatt in Sao Paulo. So, you know, in terms of a career move, is a decent step up. And he was one of our most social GMs. A lot of people said he got that, he's quite young as well, he got that progression because he's a great GM. But I think he got a lot of exposure through embracing social. So now I use that as a story as well of how to, you know, carrot rather than the stick.
Dan, will you be hanging around for a little while for
Like 10 minutes. I got to run, but I'll hang around for 10 minutes.
All right. Well, I want to do a quick plug for your podcast. If social care is a topic that's really important to you, you've got to subscribe to that podcast. Focus on Customer Service. Dan Moriarty and Dan Gingis co-host that podcast. Dan Moriarty, thank you so much for your insights here today.
Thanks, guys.